the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me, it won't do no good to call the police. Always come late if they come at all. Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me, it won't do no good to call the police. Always come late if they come at all. And when they arrive, they say they can't interfere with domestic affairs between a man and his wife. And as they walk out the door, the tears well up in her eyes. Last night I heard the screaming, then a silence that chilled my soul. Afraid that I was dreaming when I saw the ambulance in the road. And the policeman said, I'm here to keep the peace. Will the crowd disperse? I think we all could use some speed. Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me, it won't do no good to call the police. Always come late if they come at all.
And that was Tracy Chapman here on K108. It's time now for the Carol Cox Show. And today's guest, we have Leo Boji Jr. in the studio along with Tina Kizong. And the number to call is 524-1080. If you have a question on our topic this morning, which is domestic violence. And now here's Carol Cox.
Hey, good morning. Thank you, Francis. Really beautiful day out there, folks. And any day in Hawaii is beautiful. And just glad we all got our help. And thought I'd somehow been wanting to talk the subject. And it's fortunately it's getting some play in the media, the main media and what have you. So by accident or coincidence or whatever, I stumbled up on Mr. Boji, Pastor Leo Boji, and then Tina has, she and I have shared stories, and she's had relatives that have experienced some of the harshest of domestic violence resulting in the death. So good morning and thank you, and I hope that someone out there who's just on that edge or not understanding, we all have problems. And so hopefully, Leo and Tina, you can share with the listeners out there. And keep in mind, this is K108. You can call us at 524-1080, and you can pick up this information on podcast at carolcox.com. That's CAROLLCOX.com. All righty. Good morning, Leo.
Good morning.
Well, you've been on the scene dealing with these issues and family issues and crises. What's going on out there?
I think it's the same thing for years. The mentality about domestic violence is that it's something that just involves married couples as a family thing. But, you know, domestic violence is assault and battery. When you put your hands on someone and you injure them, that's an assault and battery. We have laws against that. But yet for years we haven't enforced those laws to the fullest extent. Now, I know people want these families to be okay, but, you know, at the same time, as I was telling you earlier, when I was in the military for 25 years in the Navy, we would put these guys in jail. Now, immediately, one incident, you put them in jail, you have to get their attention. For some reason, people think that if you calm the situation down, everybody will be okay. People don't change, they don't heal because you give them another chance to commit another attack. You have to get their attention.
Mm-hmm. And Tina...
Well, that actually leads to the segue I wanted to talk about. January 9, 2008, a 39-year-old Kalihi woman was stabbed to death Wednesday night, several feet from the front door of her apartment. It was the first homicide of 2008, and Honolulu police said that Jenny Hartsock was killed by her husband, Roy, a longtime felon, and had been in trouble with the law for more than 20 years. And she died, and this was actually not even the first incident of domestic violence. Several months back, he actually had stabbed her in the leg and was able to convince the parole board that it was an accident. And I have a little bit of testimony from a Harvard law professor that said if they would have just done a dangerous assessment right then and there, that time frame where they could have got Jenny in a more secluded area where they could have talked to her and did an assessment of this, that possibly this would not have led to her death, because the parole just didn't really, you know, they believed the situation, there was no assessment, and so several months later, here she is on the ground dead. And unfortunately, she had left another marriage. She had married him where she was in domestic violence. And so she just cycled continuously. And the unfortunate thing is when she met him, she even knew he had domestic violence in his history. She met him actually near the jail, waving through the fence. Or I don't know the whole story, but she actually literally secluded herself. And I think that's one of the most dangerous things, is she secluded herself, and just even her coworkers just would see signs, physical abuse, and went to the parole board, and nothing was done.
And then this Jenny is a family just of yours, right?
Yeah, she, my husband's sister, she was married to the son, and so there's three kids. One's real close to my son, that's his cousin. So, you know, she left behind three kids that are just bewildered how she went from one situation to another situation. So she did not empower herself in this area, and for whatever reason wasn't able to get the help, you know, because it seems like they seclude themselves, they live in fear. And even though you can see the sign and the symptoms, there was no way for her to reach out. The parole, the state, this guy just continued. And he even had an earlier conviction for domestic violence.
That's the one where he had stabbed her in the leg before and represented that he fell, and that's why he stabbed her?
Yeah, yeah. And what the Harvard law professor said, and her name is Diane Rosenfeld, she said that, you know, with like a GPS system to track them, that would help. It's what she said, if they would have done the dangerous assessment when they suspected, whether or not there was a story behind it, if they would have done the dangerous assessment in all the cases, most likely would have revealed that Roy, you know, he was a legal threat to her life.
Yes, you know, they have really got to change what they call the DNA of our thinking on domestic violence. A good friend of mine, Dr. Wayne Nickens, is an addiction specialist, and he talks a lot about changing the DNA. When you change the DNA, you now produce a different person, and our thinking must change. If that same man had stabbed a police officer or had punched out a police officer, the last thing they would be doing before a parole board is saying how there was an accident. We have to start treating domestic violence the same way. You said, and you vowed, you gave your word to this, to your spouse, to love this person. And then people say, well, you only hurt the ones you love. That is the biggest lie ever told. You hurt the people that you hate, and the person you hate the most is yourself. These people need some serious help. Not just putting them behind bars. That's just to get their attention. You know, back when I was talking about earlier, it was 48 hours that you went to jail. Then they released you. That was just to get your attention. We got their attention from there with 30 days restriction, with suspended bus. We're not playing games with this. These are violent crimes. They're not little incidents that take place in the home between people that love each other. There's something seriously wrong. If you'll stab or beat up someone you love, what would you do to everybody else? And they've got to change the thinking on that.
Now, listeners out there, how would they contact you, Pastor?
I have a website. Okay. And it's www.wclandtm. It stands for World Christian Leadership and Training Ministries. It's a 40-page website. It's on marriage, relationships. And many of these relationships, as a matter of fact, start out with really terrible beliefs from their past. You know, how do you know about marriage? You watch your parents. And today we know there are so many single parents. And at the same time, they're basing this on movies and soap operas, this love thing, these feelings. you know, those feelings only last a short time. It's not about the feeling, it's about the true love. And until we start changing, like I said, our thinking on, first of all, marriage and family. Who are these people? What are you getting yourself into when you give your word to be with someone the rest of your life? We've got to start teaching on that. And churches are very much responsible for doing these things.
Uh-huh. You know, that song that we played with Tracy Chapman, she talks about basically an incident occurring one night, and she called. They called the police, and the police come and can't do anything. And that's not because the police don't care.
Yes.
It's the legislation and,
yes.
and the courts and what have you. But things are evolving. With those incidents being aired out and shown publicly, things are changing.
Hopefully.
But you know, and we were talking earlier, domestic violence. It's horrendous when people are stabbing and shooting and killing, and the police officer responds, and at that time is probably at greater risk than the general public can imagine. That the spouse, when she see the husband being handcuffed, or the boyfriend, or whomever, the abuser being handcuffed, there's a potential that she may stab or injure the police officer.
Absolutely.
And I don't know, in my days of law enforcement, it was something we were trained to be real concerned about, but anyway, Tina, your program, you interact with some of the military soldiers, the new recruits and what have you, and is part of that thing dealing with domestic?
It is. We talk about self-worth, and we actually talk about all the different relationships, the difference between a one-night stand and dating, all the way to marriage. And so it's talking about personal responsibility, mm-hmm. and what's the level of respect that you're giving to that person, because why is it different at different levels?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my mom went through years of domestic violence with my dad, and she said the thing that really finally woke her up, because there was times she had a death wish on herself. She just couldn't see any way out and just wanted to die. And she said when she finally empowered herself, when she started to realize that there's so much more of herself and started to love herself and bring up her self-worth, she, you know, went back to work. She did things to raise her level of, and then her awareness, because she realized, you know, that if she didn't get out of this cycle, not only was she going to probably die, but she's putting all of us at risk. And so she said it was really a struggle, because she had disempowered herself so much. And there were seven kids. It's not easy when you got seven kids. Like you said, Carol, you're thinking about the food on the table, the money. There's so many things. But if they can confidentially get services where they can do an assessment to see their true situation and how hostile it is, it really makes a difference. Because then they start to see where they can empower themselves and move on in that situation instead of repeating the cycle. Because as Leo had said, a lot of times otherwise you just go to the next relationship. You know, it's just a continuous cycle of from one person beating you up to the next person beating you up. And so it's a double-edged sword of bringing more awareness out to everyone in the community. You know, what can we do to empower each other so that the lady or the child or another man, whoever is being is having that situation where they're feeling isolated and letting it continue, how do you stop that? How do you help the person bring that awareness to themselves that they are their biggest advocate, and then it's up to others around them once they can see that I need to better my situation,
mm-hmm.
because if I'm going to stay here, I'm going to end up dead. And usually that's what happens. Three women a day nationally are killed by their intimate partner.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you 100%, Tina. That is so true. It's about self-worth. On that website, you'll see a book called The Road to Self-Worth. There's a huge difference between self-worth and self-esteem. I think people think they're the same thing. Self-esteem comes to you by something that you do. People esteem you for what you do. But your self-worth comes from inside yourself. You decide I'm worth it. You decide I will demand respect. And I was teaching this 10, 15 years ago, and I said the same thing. The woman involved, and you know most of the time it's the woman that's being abused. once she recognizes that it's a self-respect and a self-esteem and a self-worth issue altogether about herself and gets help, she will no longer tolerate this type of behavior. And once she no longer tolerates this behavior and stands up, you see dramatic changes. And I know because society still thinks, well, it's okay, but you've got to do something. It's our job as a pastor, as a minister, and as you've seen in our Honolulu Advertiser, the seven-part series here on domestic violence, there's a great awareness right now that we don't act and move on this to recognize we need people to come down on this with both feet. Put these guys in jail and not just lock them up. Get them some help, because their issues really isn't about that woman, really isn't about beating up their children. It's their own personal low self-esteem and self-respect and a total lack of self-worth. How can you punch out a woman? How can you punch out a kid? I can tell you in three words why they do it. Because they can't. That's the only reason. You know, in the military, when you got mad at, as a command master chief or a sergeant major, and you're just really mad at them, you know what you do? Nothing. You walk away. But in your house, this woman's there, this child's there, you're a big man, you can just punch them out, do anything you want, and society puts you in jail maybe for a day or two, no one says anything, send you back in that house. And the fear that they live every day, it has to stop. Mm-hmm. It is time that we stand up, not as ministers, as police officers, but as society, and say enough of this. Enough domestic violence.
Well, you know, in some of the points that we were talking and that I received from you, you talk about, Leo, a pastor, being right, being the boss, insecurity, being mama's boy, or daddy's little girl, and on and on. Can you share with what the philosophical?
Yes, you know, many men, especially in our society in America, are not raised up to be a man. You know, we're raised up to be a male. A male will do anything. A man will respect a woman, but a male will do anything. And I differentiate that in the book. You know, the same thing with women. Are you a woman or you're a girl? It's time that we start looking at these different things. We got to teach our sons. I have four sons. You have to teach your sons how to be a man. It doesn't just fall out of the sky. And one of the number one ways you know that you're a man is your respect for women. You know, sometimes some of the guys that know me, I have four sisters, and my second oldest sister was the toughest kid on the block. So they say, well, you were afraid of the girls anyway when you were growing up. But the truth of it is if you're a man, number one thing that you know that tells you you're a man is your respect for women. And the same thing for these girls, these daddy's girls. They get in these relationships, they put a lot of pressure on their husbands, on their boyfriends even, to meet their every need. Even when they maybe even flirt around, and next thing you know, you are a very violent situation. They bring it on themselves. But we got to address these things. It is not okay to continue to let males do whatever they want and these daddy's girls do whatever they want. We don't want to address that. What man wants to be called a mama's boy? You know, all men are mama's boys. But whether or not you are a man and respect women is a different thing.
Mm-hmm. So it's also looking at relationship myths and breaking through those myths, because a lot of times you're expecting everything from that one person, and you got to realize you've got your whole family, you got all other contacts around you that can support and will support you. So, you know, sometimes when you're expecting everything just from one person, that myth alone of those expectations, and especially for gentlemen that are, you know, and then they're thinking they got to be everything, mm-hmm. and they don't know how to be soft. You know, everything is, you know, one way. So I think looking at relationship myths and breaking through that is really important.
Absolutely. You know, the football player, you're watching these, especially these playoffs later, said, oh, there's a real man. Look at that hit. You know, and that's our mentality. Well, that's a real man playing football. When you walk off that field, you see some of these players that are role models for family. They put their wife and their children before everything else. It's not that hit on the field. It's who you are in real life. You know, people know you by what you say, but they define you by what you do. You can say I love you all you want, but there is no violence in love. And we need to stop this mentality that anything you want to do, I own you, you're my family. That's nonsense. You don't own anybody.
Now, you talk about some of the talking points, the love that's displayed between you and your wife or your spouse is reflected in the children.
Absolutely.
How does that go?
You know, many people ask, will you counsel my teenagers, you know, especially when that 13 to 15 year age comes up, you know, they're starting to develop into somebody they don't know who it is. And so they've been watching you and their mom, speaking on the male side, watching you and their mom. the amount of love you have for your wife will reflect back in your children, because the number one rule for marriage, as far as I'm concerned, is husbands, love your wife. Love her. If you don't know how to love her, guess what? Only one person can teach you how to love your wife, that's your wife. Mm-hmm. But we think it's in some book somewhere. Yeah, I wrote a book and there's other books out. It'll tell you about love. But the only person that can love your wife unconditionally is your wife teaching you how to do it. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to do that. We don't want to sit down with our wives and say, is this what you want? Is this what you want? We don't want to do that. We want to guess.
Now, we want to make sure that the guy who's sitting there, well, I'm excluded because I'm not married to her.
Oh, wow.
What do you have to say to that guy who thinks, well, I'm exempt
to this? Intimate relationships. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true. But let me tell you something. This not bound. The thing that makes a marriage is your word. I give my word, my vow, for the rest of my life. The reason you do that is you don't know what's happening tomorrow. The future's out there. The future may be unknown, but it's not uncertain. If you do certain things in the present, you create that future. But if you let your future just happen, you know, that's a free will also. You have got to recognize that you've got to love this woman
unconditionally.
There's no way a man has been taught to do that. She's got to teach you to do that. And it's not difficult, let me tell you. You know what? Most women don't know that their role is to teach their husband, you know, how to love them.
Yeah.
That vow makes that work.
Well, I have a caller for the two of you. Bob, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. How are you?
Pretty good. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I think we got a guy coming up for sentencing, and I think it's later on this week, the guy that was in Kailua that beat his wife to death and then beat a Good Samaritan. You remember
yes.
that case last year?
Yes.
Okay. Now, that case is a perfect point that I want to get across. That guy was known way before he did that he was a super danger. My advice to the agency right now, you know, is to review all of the domestic violence cases and all the TROs, you know, to keep going back on some of them. They don't renew them. They just, when you get it, they just forget about it. But that, remember, that TRO is for a dangerous person, was identified, and they just forget about them. You know what I mean? And that's why we have all these cases where all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a guy kills this woman. Because we're not watching these guys. They are some of the most dangerous people. Because, you know, I've been taught that if you ever hit a woman, that is probably the lowest of low life
yes.
anybody could be. A woman and a child. You know what I mean? Especially your wife that bores a child. So it's just a vicious circle that these people are in. And us as people that are trying to help it, we just jump in the middle of the whole game. You know what I mean? Like, we're kind of late, you know, when we get at this stage. But you know, how would you just comment on that and then I can go on?
Well, I think that's where the dangerous assessment would really be helpful in a lot of these cases, because what would happen is, you know, then you're referring the spouse or the child or whoever it is so that they can get some confidential services that will help them to understand the danger they're in. But I think first it has to be called a dangerous assessment, that if the parole or there's any reason to suspect that, you know, it's called a dangerous assessment, and they take a look at what's going on and not just believe some Hancock story about, you know, I tripped and the knife went all the way through one leg to the next leg. I mean, when, you know, and she had really pulled herself so away from the family that it was the co-workers recognized that.
That they get assessment, you know, that they tripped and all this stuff. They should be fired on the spot. You know, here you got a dangerous person. He's saying he tripped and he hit his kid or this and that. That's just all so phony. As soon as they open their mouth and start lying, you lock them back up again. You know what I mean?
Well, the one gentleman, the one that beat his intimate partner with the shotgun butt,
yes.
got the three strikes you're out. I think that is the first one in Hawaii, three strikes you're out. So we're making little steps, and that's what it takes. It takes steps. You can't say it's too late, you know. Every point, you know, unfortunately, sometimes it takes these real tragedies to bring this around to everybody's attention.
When that kind of stuff happens, it almost brings up that carry law. Because remember that Good Samaritan, he was just walking down the street, he sees this guy with a shotgun beating a woman. You know, if I had a gun and it was legal, I would have just went out and shot that guy in the head. See, the woman is already dead on the ground. This guy, let's justice right now. So, that kind of activity leads to lawlessness. So we have to stop it before people like anybody, the Samaritan, gets into that situation where he can get harmed.
But yet, Bob, it sounds like you are the type of person that will step forward and do something.
Like,
and that itself is very... Sometimes that's what it takes, too, is not being afraid to stay in your house and to be the one to call the police or get the attention somehow that there's something wrong that needs to be addressed.
Yeah. Like I said, the agencies, the schools can see this, the violence. You know, because I'm really into this. You can see a violent kid, you know what I mean? He kills little animals, he tortures stuff, you know what I mean? The people who are out there see this, but they just don't try to solve the problem as soon as they see it. They put it off, oh, he's going to change, this is going to happen. Everybody wants to think positive, but, you know, it just doesn't happen that way with the violent thing. You know what I mean? I've been taught not to be violent, you know what I mean? It's hard to hold that in because people are violent.
Yeah, because then you sometimes can beat yourself up on the inside, and that's not healthy either.
Yeah, well, I'm old enough where I'm kind of confident, but I just wish that the ATCs that are, I really appreciate what you guys do, especially the pastor, he has a right attitude, you know. Get the, you know, bone to the bone, you know, when you get something wrong, you know, you identify it and you punish the people for did it.
Right. Well, you have to keep in mind also, Bob, that these people have probably suffered violence also. I'm not saying their excuse now, but we have to keep that in mind because they didn't just begin doing this thing by accident.
Right.
That's why I say it's so important. Once they are arrested, that they have to get some help. We can't just release them and say, okay, now they've calmed down, go back. They need some serious help.
Yeah, really. Only release when they really can prove, when they can actually break down in front of somebody and admit they're, you know, dead, they got a problem. They don't do that, but I've been in that situation before. You have to come to a certain point in time in your life where you realize that you are the problem, nobody else but yourself. And if you don't get them to do that, I don't let them out.
Yeah.
And they couldn't lie to me if the guy's breaking down and crying, hey, you're BS, bro. I want to see some real, you know, a real resentment, real commitment to, you know, changing.
So what would you like to see from the legislature? What would you like
to see? I would like them to pass some stiffer laws when somebody is convicted for it. You know what I mean? You have to be convicted. And then there has to be a program where you watch him for at least 5 years. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and if he teaches himself and he has all that treatment along that 5 years time, then you let him back. I wouldn't, because we have a success rate of almost zero, it seems like, you know, with these guys.
Right, right.
You know, well, it doesn't heal. You know what I mean? I know guys like that. I know local guys that do that kind of stuff, and I see them. They may stop for a little while, but they go right back to it. You know what I mean? You see the girl with a broken head or a big fat eye, and it happened again. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
But thank you, Bob. And please stay vigilant out in your neighborhood and contact your neighborhood city council and the people around you and stay active. We appreciate it.
Aloha, Bob. Anyway, thanks for offering that. So some of the things that jump out at me is that there's someone sitting there needing to contact someone, not going to the police. But where are the crisis line? Is there a crisis line in the state here?
There is a domestic violence crisis line.
Right.
I'm sure there is.
Reason is you can't cover everything, and I'm sure there's someone out there, you should have done this. Well, I'm doing what I'm doing, and I do what I do best with what I got. So
hopefully if someone knows that, they can call in and let
Right, but, you know, and we're going to follow up later and talk about those things and put it, but I want, you know, I've been wanting to talk about this for a couple of months because, and so just so happened things, and I stumble in with you. But we're going to take a break for a brief second, and we're going to come back, and then hopefully you guys can, someone out there, give us a call, or you can share with them. This is the Carol Cox Show at 524-1080.
Hi, friends. Have you ever seen other people experiencing interstate highway ditch and thought, that could be me? Well, now, thanks to modern realities of speed and distraction, interstate highway ditch can be yours. Here's how. Next time you're in a car and the driver's driving recklessly, simply say nothing. That's right. Let them speed around corners and drift across lanes. Ignore that little feeling in the pit of your stomach, and you too can experience interstate highway ditch. Interstate highway ditch.
There's enough food to feed the world. Why wouldn't there so many of us? Are there people still alone? Why are the little star peacekeepers when there ain't to kill? Why is a woman still not safe when she's in her home? Love is hate, war is peace, no is yes, zero is peace. But somebody's gonna have to answer. The time is coming soon. Amidst all these questions and contradictions, there's some who seek the truth. Tell me, why do the babies starve? There's enough food to feed the world. Why wouldn't there so many of us? Is there people still alone? Peacekeepers, when there ain't to kill. Why is a woman still not safe when she's in her home? Love is hate, war is peace, no is yes, we're all free. But somebody's gonna have to answer. The time is coming soon when the blind will lose their blinders and the speechless speak the truth. Tell me, why do the babies starve? Enough food to feed the world. Why wouldn't there so many of us? There's people still alone. Why are the little salt peacekeepers when there ain't to kill? Why is a woman still not safe when she's in her home? Love is hate, war is peace, no is yes, we're all free.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Tracy Chapman is just absolutely unreal with her lyrics, and she speaks for a lot of us, and I think what's nice about that, it's just nice to put a little music with some of the sorrow and help us get through it. But anyway, I have Pastor Leo Bozé and Tina Quizon from Pathways to Paradise, and again, you can catch her show on the Olelo at Channel 49 at 6:30 on Mondays. And Pastor, you also occasionally appear on some of the shows. You just did one.
Yes, I did a three-part series on domestic violence with Olelo on a program called Sons of Issachar with Pastor Eric Hurd.
Sons of
Issachar.
Issachar.
Yes.
And when is that going to air? Is there any scheduled date?
Yeah. His show airs Sunday nights, every Sunday night at 10:30 on Channel 52.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And are yourself and other members of churches or churches, is there a coalition that can, or a person can call up and respond? Or
You know, there really is. One of the things we've been addressing is for pastors so they can go to their own church, their own pastor, because this is where it needs to start. You're attending this church, and one of the things we addressed, matter of fact, at the state capitol just a week ago, right on the rotunda, I spoke just a few minutes on that. They have got to stop counseling people when they come in and we sit down, let's pray that it won't happen again, and then they walk out of the office. Well, it's great to pray for these people, but when they tell you that this man just beat me up and you're praying for them and letting them out of the office, you just heard someone admit to a crime, and then you let them walk out of the office. Now, I know it's difficult, especially for the wife and the husband in that situation, to say, for the pastor to say, you know what, I'm calling the police. But you know something? If you don't call them now, you're going to call them later.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to stop playing games with us. And as Bob was talking about in the earlier segment, you know what you have to do? You start treating this, as I said earlier, as just like you just assaulted a police officer. What would happen to you? You think you'd be back on the street tomorrow? You think you'd be able to convince a parole board that I didn't mean to stab that cop? I didn't mean to punch out that cop. You know, it's time for us to change, as I said, the DNA of our thinking about domestic violence with a zero tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Zero. And once they recognize that I can't get away with this, you know what happens? You get help.
Well, what's striking in most of these cases, he had a laundry list of violations and run-ins with the law early, and it's, well, this wasn't just domestic violence.
Yes.
In this one incident.
Yes.
It culminated, and we have arrived at this level, but we had warnings a long time ago, so that brings me to one major point here, and I'm always foul-mouthed, and I try to tell it like it is, but what I have with great caution is to watch our legislators.
Yes.
Who sit in these issues, and they talk them up because they're sensitive, they bring you votes, you look like you care, but at the end of the session, You don't have any money. You don't have any crisis hotlines. You don't have anything. And so there's a lady out there just ready, or a man, or whomever, ready to take that, cross that threshold, leave that. But where does she go? How does she protect herself? She got to go to work. Where does she feed herself? And they have families or shelters for battered women. But that's a hell of an effort for this one individual, while the guy gets to go to his job,
yes,
become as a construction worker or office manager or whatever, do his thing, and she becomes the criminal in a sense, because she has to now make surreptitious phone calls, or whisper in the dark of night, can't give her. So how do we get away from that?
It is. It's a total mindset change. You're absolutely right. They're letting hardened criminals back on the street because they don't look at these crimes as serious
mm-hmm.
crimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was one, I think, here in Hawaii not too long ago, maybe within the last 2 years, where the guy had beaten this woman 8 times, maybe more, at least 8 times. He'd gone to jail a number of times, and he does his 18 months or 6 months or whatever they gave him. He's back out on the street. This time he went over and killed her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at some point we've got to stop playing games with this. And that's really the foundation of what this is going on. We need to recognize, as I keep saying, these people have serious problems. They are criminals. You know, not the first time. I'm not saying that, you know, when you first do it, because I think we kind of test to see if we can get away with it. And then when they don't come down hard on them, they're going to do it again.
Now, do our legislators partnership with you and other churches, or is there such an outreach from the legislators where they approach you with sincerity, not the other way around?
Actually, Representative John Mizuno called me, and I was introduced to him. And he has been behind a lot of things we're trying to do. The White Ribbon Campaign, which is a campaign to teach men and boys respect for women.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been working together, trying to put this whole campaign together. And we're going to introduce this presentation with seminars and workshops for men and boys, that they've got to change their thinking, too. They may not get it from their father. They might even get it from their mothers. But society has got to start putting these things in place. Now, there is a resolution that they passed to produce this and create a White Ribbon Campaign. And it was passed through the House and the Senate. But, you know, that's great. That's a great start. But they, as Carol just said, where's the money? They've got to come up with some funding to do these things, because talk is just talk. 2 years from now, we'll still be talking about the White Ribbon Campaign. But someone's got to donate. Someone's got to pass some legislation and say, we're going to fund these things, because society is out of control.
And a lot of times the burden will fall also on shelters. You know, by the time they get to the homeless shelter, because they have nowhere else to go, it'll be the case manager that's finding this out. And so the shame of it, and not having that focal point of where you can turn when you're realizing that the situation you're in is very horrible, you know.
Yes.
How can you confront that if you have no safe haven or no outlet? So it's building upon, where's the outlet? Because once you start to recognize it and you're trying to empower yourself, you need that outlet where you can go, and it's a safe haven where you can assess what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
and get the counseling, because it's not only counseling for you, it's usually counseling for the other person too, that what's going on, where's the respect, what happened here, that okay, that, you know, the female has to, or the child or the other person has to feel ashamed when the other person's running around thinking they haven't done anything wrong, because it's taken so lightly, as Tracy Chapman's song talks about. You know, oh, it's just domestic violence.
Exactly.
You know, and like the lady from Harvard sent me the statistics, 3 women a day are killed by their intimate partners. You know, and she was saying more on dangerous assessments and GPSs would really be a big help to, you know. And she's writing because of 2 of the cases in Hawaii. You know, she did a whole thing about some of the most, you know, critical that are, okay, when are we going to wake up about this? When are we going to finally say, let's not be compliant?
So that GPS, what is that? Go to prison and stay?
It's that. It's that.
I know. I'm.
Well.
That's good.
Yeah, go to prison and stay. That's what GPS should stand for. But you're talking about the tracking device,
yeah.
which would like. But if a guy is already hell bent on That means with the GPS, okay, he violates it and he gets to, he encroaches into this mile radius. But do we have the capacity in the state and the funding to respond to a GPS violation? You know what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah.
Do we? In all reality, do we have that capacity? Oops, number 6923 just encroached into the 100 or the mile radius of victim. So send a policeman out there. So we got to be smart about legislation. See, if that's why I said legislation sounds good. Oh, we're going to fund this, or we're going to implement this and require. But then you got a leg omelet. Mm-hmm. And your GPS is sending out a beep, but you don't have an officer to respond because they're underfunded and we don't have adequate numbers and we don't have a special team of people. So we got to be careful in acquiring and relying on these tools.
Yeah, that's so true. But the mentality is that they're going to be okay. Don't worry about it. They're really not going to go back. Even with the GPS, the mentality of law and law enforcement is so far off today. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have a death penalty anymore. Now, here I am as a pastor. I'm going to tell you straight up, and I hear many people say that. The Bible says, and you can find it, thou shalt not kill. There is no scripture in the Bible that says thou shalt not kill. Where that came from, I have no idea. It says thou shalt not murder. Big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so this mentality is, oh, they'll be okay, you know, we'll let them out. When you stop playing games with these guys, now I'm not an advocate of someone needs to go to jail for 5 or 10 years for something like this. They need to go and get treatment until you can clearly define that this person can be released. Now, you may make a mistake every now and then, but if we just think it's the time behind bars that changes people, it doesn't change anybody. Time doesn't heal anything. I know people think it does. Time doesn't do anything. It's the action you take over time that makes a difference in people's lives.
And that GPS system you're talking, then that would complement having that, having a transition period, having a crisis management, coupled with that, then just in case he slips up. Mm-hmm. But when you just take him, stick him in jail, he's more furious now than ever. And then he gets out and you stick something on him. So, you know, if we have training and cool down period and monitoring.
Because they got to understand the dynamics of the domestic violence.
Uh-huh.
And it's like Pastor Leo was saying, that sometimes this is a taught behavior that maybe their dad, you know, through the generations, maybe this is something that they haven't learned, different skills. So it's bringing new skill sets so that families are aware, what else can we do besides this reaction? Because sometimes they've just, for whatever reason, haven't learned a different way of handling and expectations, relationship myths again. You know, what is romance? What is love? You know? So some of these myths that we create in these expectations, that if we can give new sets of tools so that men and women, you know, no one's perfect. You're going to have up days and down days. You know, you're going to cry. You're going to, you know, you can't. But if you can give new tools to start to understand that no one's perfect, and sometimes our expectations of, you know, we expect this person to be all this way, and we don't have other tools to cope with, you know, and it could be something that was handed down through the generations.
No question about it. Like I said, watching TV, movies, soaps, people got this crazy idea about romance. Let me tell you something right now. Romance is an illusion. It's something you have made up over a period of your life. This imaginary person. So you go out and you try to find this person that fits this illusion.
And they're
that you
all
have.
Sweet. They're sweet.
Oh, yeah. You know, you have your list of 10 things that they've got to fit. And so you find somebody and you hunt around. You can't find anybody with the 10 things, but you find a 7. And so 7's good enough. You take that 7. But after a while, the 3 things that you just got to have in a person become the paramount thing.
The bitter.
So, yeah.
The bitter.
So you drop this person and you find somebody that's got the 3. Now you're worse off because they don't have the 7. I mean, this is this illusion, this romantic thing that people have. It's nonsense. We're human beings. Everybody's different. There's nobody out there that's been created to make you happy. If you're not happy, do something with yourself. If your life is miserable, guess what? Your life is exactly the way you want it to be right now. And if it's not good, then you do something to change it. But when you put that burden on somebody else, to love you unconditionally, to do all these different things. Let me tell you something. You got to put out what you want to get back.
Mm-hmm.
And changing this mentality, this movie, soaps are the worst. People watch these things until they're so engrossed in them that that's what they're looking for, this imaginary romantic relationship that doesn't exist. And it never will exist.
Mm-hmm. So, Tina, I'm a young lady out there, just got into a relationship. And what do I look for?
I think you look for the red flags when if you have a heated argument and you just can't come to that, you know, give and take situation where there's a clear understanding and someone starts to hold an expectation on you. You know, look at how are you both dealing with that. You know, is there some telltale signs of violence? You know, and then you have to stop and say, do I want to go further with this? Do I want to stay or put myself in that situation? Because a lot of times we get ourselves locked in and trapped in these situations, and then we think there's no way out. That's what my mom was saying, that she got married very young, had a lot of kids, and so it was scary for her. It was scary for her. What is she going to do? You know, here, she's not the breadwinner of the home. So she dealt with it for a while until she finally couldn't. She said, I was creating my own death wish.
Mm-hmm.
And she finally decided, I have to empower myself. And whether I'm with him or not, they finally realized she couldn't be with him.
Mm-hmm.
There was a cycle going on that wasn't going to break until one either died or walked away. And she chose to walk away, and she empowered herself. And she said it took a long time because she would beat herself up inside, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times she would just stay because that was the right thing. You didn't want other people to know the shame of it. And then there was nowhere to go. But now I think we have the opportunity in the 21st century to look around and have outlets and ways and teach young people that there's other ways to deal with violence.
But I guess the key in all of this, what I'm hearing, is you have to make that initial statement, overt, or speak out about it, make an attempt. But if you internalize it, I guess that's what I'm hearing. That's that critical step.
You usually somehow isolate yourself. You are internalizing it,
mm-hmm.
and then you're just not recognizing how hostile and how harmful of a situation you've gotten yourself into. So it's really you've backed yourself into a corner.
So talk to a mother, father,
talk
or
to someone.
Someone.
Yeah, talk
go to, your
to
church
anyone,
or...
and especially for you folks, especially in the service. If you're a second class, a first class, and maybe you got all your stuff together, remember there could be others below you that may not have their stuff together. So be that leader. Allow that open door policy.
Mm-hmm.
Really need that open door policy, that even if you're not doing it, make sure you're the open door for another person or another couple, that if there's things going on and they're not handling their relationship where they're, you know, they're frustrated, because a lot of times it's this expectation, this frustration, and so then it's domestic violence. But if they have opportunities to communicate differently and learn some different skill sets is really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But we all need to be diligent. We all need to have open door policies,
mm-hmm.
and not make it a shameful thing, not sweep it under the carpet. So
mm-hmm.
that's...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Pastor, I'm sitting at home, and now I'm hearing this. So what do I do? I mean, I don't want to do this, but... How do I,
you know,
slip this chain?
Yeah, most people, I'm going to say, have no clue what to do. But there are professional people that do. The problem with not knowing what to do is the refusal to seek help. And so that's why we came down so hard on guys in the military. At Conway Marine Corps Base, between 1988-89, we had one counselor. When we cracked down on this, they had 9 counselors on that base. People began to come to get training. They came to find out about marriage and relationship. And you know what they found out? A lot of things Tina's saying, and she's teaching at Pearl Harbor. They don't know. And
mm-hmm.
so if we provide these things, you know, right now the Army statistics are out off the charts, the suicide and everything else. You've got to teach these people about living, you know. You've got to teach these people about, listen, unresolved past issues are present issues. If you have got unresolved issues and you go off to war for a year, and 3 months, and you come back, those unresolved issues are huge now. And plus, you get 4 days off, they let you have a little time off with your family. That's really great 4 days. But you know what happens on the fifth day and you come back to work? Your whole life comes tumbling in on top of you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the time that these people need these people skills training. We have a segment of our workshop called People Skills, where you get to find out who you are. You get to trust your feelings. You know, you said, what's a good telltale sign? If you're married and you vow to each other and you have a trust issue, it is an issue that says your love is waning away.
Mm-hmm.
You trust people you love. So if you stop trusting, it's saying work on your marriage. If I don't trust you, I need to work on my marriage, because your love is starting to wane. You're starting to be pulled away. Trust is the biggest indicator.
And I think it's recognizing other people's values. Everybody has their own unique values and things that are important to them and things that aren't important to them. And so sometimes if you're not communicating and you're just expecting that you've married your duplicate,
oh,
you know, you're just setting yourself up for frustration, which
mm-hmm.
can lead to later on to things like this, domestic violence. So a lot of times it's recognizing who the person really is, not who you want them to be,
mm-hmm.
but who are they.
Right, exactly.
Now, here's a very sensitive one. Now, we all talk as if, you know, it's a stabbing, it's a shooting, it's a beating. But other forms of the verbal, but one greater one I was told, it was shared with me by a lady that there's another type of abuse that goes on within the home or within a relationship, and that's the incest, where the husband takes advantage of the family members.
Yes.
And with the threat looming that if you were to tell,
mm-hmm.
dire consequences will be on place upon you. Real quickly, we don't have much time, but either both of you chime in. Is that a form of abuse?
Absolutely. It comes from this. I mentioned before, being a male or being a man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll speak just straight up. A man should never rule over his house. If you rule over your house, and people think that's a good thing, that's a curse. Any man that rules over his house will have incest with his daughters and with his sons. He'll beat up his wife. He'll beat up the kids. You're supposed to honor and respect your family. Somewhere this rulership and ownership has to stop. You're not called to rule over your house. You're called to be the head of the house.
And I think with anything, when incest, you know, a lot of times it's that suppression, when we're having suppression, you know, and then it's suppressed somewhere,
mm-hmm.
you know. So looking at the dynamics, you know, do you have realistic expectations on
mm-hmm.
your sexual desires? Because we all have sexual desires, and that's not something to be ashamed of, you know, but you have to be reasonable and realize, and it's not something to dominate other people
right.
about. And if you're in that situation where someone is dominating you, again, you got to look at and seek help,
mm-hmm.
and don't feel you have to be a victim.
Okay. Well, I want to thank both of you for joining Pastor Leo J. Bojay. Your phone number on here, it's first of all, your website is WCLTM. WCLNTM.com.
Yes.
And your email is WCLTM@hawaii.rr.com. Now, people can contact you through there. Is your phone number real quick?
Phone number is 294-1397. And also Google my name, Leo Bojay, and that'll come up for you.
And website. Tina, real quick, if you...
My phone number is 808-387-5010. And again, you can always... email me, tquizan@hawaii.rr.com, and watch Pathways to Paradise every Monday evening at 6:30 p.m.
Okay, Olelo.
Olelo, Channel 49,
okay.
and the Internet.
Well, anyway, thank you, and I will have you back again. We'll talk, and I'll try to contact Mr. Representative Mazzano and Mizuno. And thank you for listening out there. I hope that this helped, and if anybody have any questions, you can call me directly at 524-1080 or 782-6627. If you have a problem, maybe we can help you see the light at the end of the tunnel or get out of the tunnel. But anyway, thank the two of you for coming. And again, I'm not a professional on this subject, but anything I can do to air it and get it out there, we're going to do it.
That's the most important thing.
Thank you. Well, thank you. Aloha.
All that you can say, years gone by and still.
This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.